This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Matthew Jide, CEO, NTT Security.
Yes, hi Ian. Matthew Jide, CEO of NTT Security, the security division within NTT Limited. Yeah, we're about 120 days into this journey, probably 120 days since we last spoke. It's been a lot of work, a lot of discovery. I think I said in our last discussion that we really needed to understand what we had here. We've made a lot of announcements about the innovation that we're trying to do and that we're going to do moving forward. And all of that innovation for us is driven around client experience. So how do we make the client experience more enjoyable, more secure, but also allow our clients to move from this very reactive security posture they're in today to a predictive security posture? That's where the innovation piece comes in.
The problem with innovation is that companies use it to sort of play with R&D. And often when we see things, they're not truly innovative. They're just a couple of products that are better integrated. What's going to be innovative in this for customers and for NTT Limited?
Yeah, I'll go back to that point I just made. So moving our client posture from reactive to predictive. A lot of our R&D work is focused on the content of what we see on the internet, not on a client or an enterprise side of things. So we get that data, but we're also seeing what's happening on the internet, which gives us, I believe, a unique perspective. I think NTT and our connectivity globally allows us to see a very large percentage of the internet traffic, probably more than our competitors see. Having a look at that data, we can start to see botnets being created. We can see when those botnets are created, what they're infecting, and then when they're trying to sell that botnet on the dark web or however they decide to sell it. From there, using the machines, we can make instantaneous decisions that we know it's been sold to a certain group who target financial services, and then we know what sort of attacks they do because we've seen their communications as well. So we can really start to then engage our clients and say, listen, here's the 30 threat vectors that we see coming over the next 6 months, and this is how we advise you to adjust your security posture. Now, obviously, the industry is innovating, not just us. The whole security to the cloud, I think we're rapidly seeing that. We're seeing that right across our business, but specifically in the security space. Moving security to the cloud allows us to make much faster decisions. It's not the 6 to 8 weeks of waiting for a new product to turn up. So it's literally turn on a product, turn it off if that's what you want to do. The cloud security piece allows us even wider scope to innovate and not to have a product, to have a service that we take to market, which is then ingested into our managed security service, which allows us to share that information across multiple client vectors. I'd like to think our R&D isn't just specifically product, but really looking at the industry as a whole, and we're part of all the different groups that are there, but how can we help the industry improve, not just NTT?
But one of the things with the new business is you're not just security anymore. You've got all the data centers coming. You've got a vast amount of work on AI and machine learning that's been brought in. Huge experience in running networks and laying cable. How do you take that step beyond that with innovation? For example, instead of telling customers this attack's coming and you might want to do this, how do you build that into AI systems that actually start to see that detection as warning flags go down and turn stuff on as required and just let the customers know, hey, we've got this?
Yes. One of the fantastic things about this organization, NTT, is our spread across the technology stacks, I guess. That really brings a differentiation for us into the market. Whilst we're off doing our security pieces, we're also looking at this from a how do we integrate fully into an offering that we take to the client. If they want to put their applications in a certain cloud, what does that look like? How's the connectivity happen there? But more and more, the organization's moving to a concept that we've brought up within the security team called Secure by Design. We look at that from a point of view of there's an enormous amount of risk in any decision a client makes in terms of technology, not just security, but if their new data center, where they're going to put that data center, is it close to connectivity, are there undersea cables coming into the right spot, a whole bunch of things like that. But then that opens up, well, if they don't know about certain things, what's the security risk around that? Ensuring that our machine learning is common across the organization allows us to have that common discussion across it, bringing context into that, and that's a lot of our threat intelligence, is putting the context to what we discover. So we've seen this, this is what's going to happen, this is our recommendation. Now, what we'd love to do in terms of that innovation is move to a position where we're making that decision on behalf of the client because their security posture is going to be threatened. Therefore, we believe you need to do this and making that decision. There's a tremendous amount of trust that the client has to be willing to give, just as the nature of things. A human being is like, I can secure myself better than other people, but if I get so big, I need support, but I still want to be in that decision chain. You're absolutely right, spot on with that question. Any innovation that we do has to be across all the different technology stacks that we do. Particularly excited about about this one because I think NTT have made a commitment to the market to invest annually over $3 billion in R&D. And that's about not only new offerings and new innovation, but how do we bring everything that we've got together today? So I think lots of opportunity for us there.
In the build-up to bringing everybody into NTT Limited, one of the things the company did was it had steering boards. And those steering boards focused very much on what products are we using, both internally and external products. What processes are we using? How do we create single processes rather than 50, 60, 70 processes bringing together? As you look at it now, how far down that journey are you? And just bringing those processes together requires a degree of innovative thinking to make that work.
Over the last probably 4 or 5 years, the organization, NTT, has moved from very much a waterfall development model to this agile model. Within the agile model, there's obviously two-week increments, and then there's scrum masters that bring all of that together. We have a program increment session that brings together a couple of hundred people on a quarterly basis. So they all get together and work out what's the next step. There's obviously, with the scrum masters, they're all talking and saying, well, hang on, we're developing this piece, you're developing it as well, why don't we co-innovate, that sort of thing. Through our CETO office, a gentleman by the name of Etienne Reinecke, we've really taken that to the next level. There's something like 1,600 different programs that are running and being coordinated internally, so we can reuse this intellectual property that we're creating within the organization.
But what is that giving you? It's very easy to say, yes, we're bringing products together. We're working with the other parts of the business to make sure that anything we create is embedded in theirs. Again, that doesn't really imply innovation, it just implies cohesion. So is there a group within NTT now that have been tasked with saying, okay, here are these products, let's imagine what we can do with these products, and let's throw R&D funds to find out what is on the edge that we can bring in?
Yes, that function is being run through our CTO office to really innovate. NTT in our R&D background has never been about what's happening next year or what's happening in 90 days. It's always been about what's happening in 10 years' time. How can we innovate today that we'll see a product or a service or something come to market in 10 years' time? That continues. The CTO office is coordinating that and accelerating that. What that allows us to do in terms of the concepts that we're bringing to market and the integration, the cohesion, it allows us to do that faster, which obviously helps a client in their ability on their digital transformation to innovate. So we're here to enable the client and the client innovation. And part of that, obviously more integrated, faster to market, and then working with our clients. So part of the function is understanding what our client outcomes are. It's fine for me to innovate and design these wonderful things internally at a huge cost to the organization, but if no client wants to buy it, it doesn't work. These innovation councils that we're now implementing through our CTO office, I think they've been running for probably the last 18 months, where we bring clients together, we bring the right R&D, the right innovators in our organization, and actually, what is the market, what is the industry trying to achieve here over a shorter period of time, not 10 years, but the next 12, 18 months? How can we drive that? So a lot of that innovation that we're doing is client demand that we're delivering on.
How do you balance innovation over cultural issues? You're not a single culture company. You're not a single continent. You span the entire globe. Within that, you have culture challenges for yourselves. You have some units that operate with more autonomy than others. But innovation has to apply to everybody. When you're planning the next strategies, how do you get everybody's buy-in without one region saying, well, we bring in more money, we're more dominant? This comes back almost to your bringing customers in, I suspect.
That's operating models as well and all of that sort of stuff. Over the last 120 days, the more we talk about innovation to just the team within security, the more excited people get. People want to be on the cutting edge of what's happening in the industry, and that's where I'm trying to move us to, that we're investing in the right places in terms of innovation, but investing in the right things, which is right at that cutting edge. This is what the industry is going to look like. Part of it is sitting down with our clients, understanding what their outcomes are going to be over the next years to come. Part of that is the discussions that I'm involved in across the whole community, like from clients to analysts to reporters, whatever it may be, and taking that information and then distilling that down to this is where we need to be as an organization, and not just security, the whole organization. Where do we need to be in order to service our client requirements? The team is getting more excited about the more opportunity there is to innovate, but then to see a lasting service that we take to market. One thing I've found is that in our employee base, our employees are not as happy or culturally aware unless they're fully integrated and innovating and having that ability to put their hand up and say, I think we should do this because we've seen this happen before. Innovation actually is a good way and turning out to be an even stronger way to A, attract new talent to the organization, but also to retain talent. As we've been in these 120-day journey, just from a security perspective, really found that our retention rates are increasing as we create let's call it pods of excellence for innovation, bringing a team of sales, operations, R&D together to say, here's a project, I'm thinking about this, would that work? And then they go off and do a quick 30-day sprint in terms of, yes, it would or no, it wouldn't. And from a point of view of, yes, it will work, but we won't be able to integrate back into the larger service of the bigger organization. So maybe we have a pause on that one until the rest of the organization's ready. Really finding it as the ability to attract new talent, but also to retain existing talent, innovation's a key.
You brought 31 companies together as part of this. Now, not every company was running its own R&D and its own innovation. There was a lot of commonality already there. But when we see organizations do this level of mega merger, the big thing is always about what savings do we make. I suppose my confusion here is I'm hearing the word savings made, but I'm not actually hearing anybody standing up and saying, well, actually, we brought this together and it's freed up an extra billion or 2 billion in innovation over the next X number of years. Has that been looked at? Are there numbers that can be talked about?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things of bringing this together is to find common ideas, concepts, R&D that we're doing across the organization and to bring those together. What we've seen is on the cost savings, and that's something that our end of financial year is in March. And so Jason will be able to take the red pen out and mark that out in terms of what that looks like. But there has been a focus on cost savings and how do we make this more efficient, all driven by what's our client outcome. One of the things is aligning our R&D capabilities to what our revenues are, rather than just saying, hey, let's build out a big R&D capability and hope the revenues come. There's that factor. As I mentioned, the program increments through the agile model that we use bring all of this talent together at least quarterly. And then there's obviously weekly phone calls and all of that sort of great stuff. That's allowed us to standardize in terms of how we develop, what concepts we develop in that area, and then drive that innovation. In terms of the R&D, we've got different R&D organizations, as you mentioned, and bringing them closer together to say, hey, we've already developed this concept. Why don't you take that to market? And great job is being done around that, and the leadership of the R&D teams coming together, communicating with each other, actually understanding what they're trying to create. In terms of cost savings, I don't think there's a number right now, but that's something obviously that Jason is looking at. Obviously, I look at that from a point of view of how can we be more agile? How can we be faster to market? How do we cohesively bring that into not only the security team, but the larger organization?
If we look at the big powerhouses of R&D around the world, the Huawei's, the Microsoft's, the Intel's, they dwarf the amount of money you have to spend. But actually, your reach, in many ways, is no smaller than theirs. How do you, as a business now, begin to punch above where you are seen?
Entity Holdings, the bigger organization, is probably one of the lesser known innovators in the technology space. From a carrier point of view, there's been, over the last 30 years, there's been a massive amount of investment. Emojis came out of Japan, and specifically NTT, and how we could shorten communication through text messages. So that sort of innovation, I don't know that we've necessarily been fantastic at telling the world what we've done. Our big drive behind everything is, how do we make the client experience better? I don't know that we'll ever be like an Intel or a Huawei in terms of that R&D, but what we need to be doing is focusing our R&D on client outcomes. And there's got to be, from a business point of view, and then there's obviously the bigger NTT R&D organization, which has a larger pot of money to draw on the scientists that are developing key innovation points that will be recognized and patented in the future and that sort of thing. The main thing is getting the word out. When we start telling people what we've done and how we've been involved in certain things is absolutely critical, but we're a very humble organization, I think, in that space. It's like, well, we did these three things that changed this. And I've got a guy in my team, for instance, that is an author of IPv6. I love telling that story because this guy spent 20 odd years, if not more, of his life developing IPv6 and being an author of that. Those sorts of things are really cool, and we just don't talk about it enough. We've got to get better at telling people what we're doing.
There's an interesting challenge in part of this. You've continually talked about agile and being customer-driven. Part of the problem about being customer-driven is you tend to be reactive, not proactive. Yet at the same time, you've stressed the need to move customers and yourselves from being reactive to proactive. How do you lead those customers, get ahead of them, start to show them things that could be there to find out what they would do with it rather than wait for them to tell you what they want and then start chasing them? Because you fall further and further behind other parts of the market if you do that.
Yes. On our MSS platform, we've got just over 1,200 clients on a global basis. We deal with roughly 6,000 clients across our entire security business. And then the bigger picture, I think, is around 14,000 clients across NTT Limited. We have a big client pool. I can guarantee you I can sit down with every one of their security people, and they've all got a different idea. What we have to do is sort of narrate that story a bit, because I think 80% of what everybody wants is common. There's that 20% custom. And that's really where we're trying to take it, moving from that reactive to proactive. We want to go even further and be predictive in our posture. How do we get out in front of that? And that's where a lot of our threat intelligence research is going on right now, is how do we get in front of this instead of trying to be a part of it? And then what do our clients want? So that 80-20 rule, that's definitely where I'm trying to get our R&D to, is 80% is covering what the client wants, and 20% is that cutting edge innovation. Client mentioned this and we heard that six different times from six different clients, and that's what it should look like. Trying to correlate all of that data that we've got, give it some context, as we try to do in the digital world, in terms of let's do these six projects now in order to start that journey. And then there'll be others that come on the back of that. The security world has got to change, is my view. You sit down with any of the 1,200 vendors that are going to be at the RSA conference this year and have that discussion. Everybody's in violent agreement. It's just budgets and P&Ls disagree with each other. An NTT type organization, it's not just us, I'm sure there's other of our competitors in the market that are looking the same thing, can really bring that consolidation about, which allows a simpler decision for the client to make. And that's what we've got to get to. My risk threshold out of 10 is 8, because I'm in the financial services industry, therefore I need these types of controls to get to 8. And I think a lot of the frameworks coming out now and that have been done in the past are really coming to relevance today.
If we think about services, innovation in services is coming about by this vast array of small companies entering the market. They can be truly agile. They can spin on the point of a needle. How do you, as a large organization, become that agile? How do you create innovation in services in a market where people don't expect necessarily innovation, they expect stability from a large vendor?
We've spent some time around that. We've got sort of four postures that we take when it comes to how do we work with the market. We are a big organization. A lot of our clients, Fortune 500, Fortune 1000, 3000, have critical aspects of their operations that I can't afford just to make a change and then reverse that change out and put the old model back. The position that we've taken in the market is we'll provide you that stable platform to operate on from a security point of view. And from there, we'll do four different methods of innovation. The first one is our R&D. So we will build. So we will build innovation, snap-ins, API-driven outcomes for the client, so we can turn discrete services on for clients. The second area that we'll do is we'll acquire. We'll go out and look at the market and say, we've got a big gap in a certain space. We'll do the model of, does it work with our technology? Will it work moving forward? So that takes us down the acquisition path. The third area is to invest. So we will look at Series A, Series B type investments. What can we do in that space? By being an investor and taking a certain position in an organization, we can influence their product. So it allows them to innovate and drive into the market, but also allows us to make sure that integration's there at some point. So we've made a few of those investments and run those, and they're working out quite well for us, I think, ultimately. And then the fourth area is to partner. There's no reason why we shouldn't be partnering with the industry best practice. So if there's some sort of, it may be bigger scale, maybe IPO'd already, publicly listed company that is innovating and doing something unique in the market, why wouldn't I want to partner with them and work out commercial terms that suit the client? So we're taking those four areas as our approach to market, and that allows us to have that our foot in that camp of we're doing pure R&D that's allowing us to truly innovate with our own intellectual property being created, but then also absorbing other intellectual property that's being created. By no means are we the security industry. There's going to be fantastic ideas constantly now. I think we've seen that with the industry as a whole. Just security is innovation, which is kind of a bizarre concept when you think about it. Security should be stability, as you mentioned earlier. So how do you balance off that stability versus innovation is the big question that we're trying to address as well.
I think it's going to be interesting watching you over the next year.
Yes, hopefully I won't lose any more hair.
Matthew, thank you very much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.